Before we get started, I want to do a couple corrections. This is VMN, Volume 4, Episode 3. I said it was Episode 4 in the recording. And I do have to apologize, there are some minor problems with the sound quality. There were two microphones active when there should have been one, and I did not catch that. I think the recording is well worth listening to despite the slight faults in it. So thank you. Welcome to VMN Volume 4, Episode 4. The date is July 26th, 2024. VMN is produced and transmitted from unceded Abenaki territory of so-called Vermont. July 25th is International Day in solidarity with anti-fascist prisoners. We are recording this episode one day late. We will be discussing the case of Alex Stokes with Daryl Lamont Jenkins. In addition to your normal host, we are very lucky to be joined by E, who will be co-hosting. Welcome, Daryl. Welcome, E. Can you start out by telling us about Alex Stokes?
So I want to thank you for having me on. I want to thank you for having me here today. There's a lot to talk about. The first thing I'm going to say about Alex Stokes is that he is a friend. That's who he is. A friend. He's not just a friend to me. He's a friend to a lot of people, especially in his hometown. And I think that there's a lot to say about his work, whether you're talking about him being a art director at the African American Cultural Center in Albany, or a beekeeper and a land tender for the Edens Rose Foundation. And he just seems to be an all-around guy. He is not there to cause the kind of grief that, say, the Proud Boys have tried to engage in over the past 8 years. I mean, you're talking about one of the good ones. And he is the farthest from a danger to society. And yet he's sitting in prison right now for 20 years. 2 years less than Enrique Tarrio, who was sitting in jail for 22 years for seditious conspiracy, for leading the Proud Boys into that seditious conspiracy. He's sitting in jail for 20 years because he was protecting others from the likes of the Proud Boys. And it's disgusting. What I would say, we wrote a story about his situation on idavox.com titled "Alex Stokes Should Not Be in Prison." And simply put, the reason why is because he was, as far as we're concerned, as far as those who look at the case is concerned, did not commit a crime. He was defending people who were being attacked, not just by Proud Boys, but by others on that Stop the Steal side, who are attacking people who are protesting now. And when you look at what happened over the course of that day, not just in Albany, but especially in Washington, D.C., I'm only but a couple of miles away from it right now as we speak, you tend to get a little annoyed by the fact that the one anti-fascist that did in fact go to jail for something that happened on January 6th is the one that was protecting others against what folks that have routinely been arrested for January 6th have been doing. Now, we know about the arrests on January 6th here in D.C. And we know what they have done. We know what they wanted to do. They tried to do something similar in Albany. And in defense against that, someone is sitting in jail for 20 years. Someone is sitting in jail for 20 years. I mean, I know you asked who was Alex Stokes, and I'm going to tell you, he's somebody worth a damn defending. He's somebody who does not need to be wasting away in the jail for 20 years because reasons, you know. I think hopefully in the future we will start seeing him come back home. And boy, does he have a story to tell, and he's good at telling stories. I mean, he's good at telling everybody exactly what's going on out there. I mean, it's important to remember that this is somebody who has been in places you didn't expect him to be, or some places you did expect him to be. You just to make sure you knew what was going on. I mean, me and him were palling around in Charlottesville and trying to make sure that each other was safe. And he interviewed me. I mean, there's video of that that you will see in one of my documentaries. And the guy and the person he is was somebody who, like I said, just gives a damn about the kind of person that you are. And he will protect you as much as he can from those who do not like who you are. In particular, when the Proud Boys come and attack you for the various reasons that Proud Boys felt the need to lash out at folks. So, I mean, in a nutshell, that's really all I can say without prompting.
Can you say a little bit more about this place?
Well, I don't know. Hold on. I don't really know much about this particular prison. So I don't know if I can actually talk about the kinds of things that go on at this particular jail. I could just mention that I have been there. I don't know if you want to leave that in the show.
Can you say what it was like going into this place? I mean, I've visited prisons, and I reviewed the rules for this facility, and the rules seem more irrational and different than what I've experienced in the past.
Yeah, well, one of the things to be, I don't go to prisons often, but so when I went to this particular prison to visit Alex with his brother and fiance, I didn't think that this was anything out of the norm. Basically, they told you that you had to wear loose fitting clothes and don't wear green because that's what everybody else wears. So and nothing in your pockets, obviously. And you know, it looked like everything was basically par for the course. The thing that I think it was really important was that we was able to just sit across from him and talk to him and play games with him and things like that. You know, he looked like he was in good spirits. He's always asking for certain music books here and there. And we talked about how he was holding up. And bear in mind, this was going on. I met up with him at this jail, I would say, just a couple, maybe 9 months after he had gotten there. I would say maybe a little bit more than that. It's been a year since I saw him last, almost a year since I saw him last. I'm going to be taking another trip up sometime in the next couple of weeks. And it's just, I thought that regardless of how much that they just like basically put the boot down on visitors, let alone the prisoners or anything, my focus is still just going to remain the same. He had no business there. That's not him. That's not where he belongs. And that's the only thing I can really just say.
E here. And Daryl, I know that like the overall temperature in this occupied land that we call America right now, it is also common journalism going through censorship and such has you. I've noted that a lot with his journalism, all I've ever seen was very factual, where most of the time we as anti-fascists or anarchists, we're so watered down to a political quote-unquote ideology, or that it's about politics, when honestly, we just want to defend our communities with truth. Can you talk more about his journalism and what it's provided to the public as you're closer to him and you know him well?
Well, his journalism was similar to mine's in the sense that you know, you don't try to get bogged down in propaganda. You never really want to just be the person that's just editorializing all the time. I mean, people need facts. People need to understand what exactly is going on. You don't want to get saddled with what you speculate as to what is going on, what you theorize, I should say. And Alex didn't do that. In fact, Alex even goes above and beyond even what I do, because I always saw my brand of journalism as simply making a case for our side with the facts. It isn't so much about a side when it came to Alex, and when it comes to Alex. He does a lot more than just politics, you know. I mean, you see him talking about community things in particular. He was somebody who was involved with his community. That's what he wrote about. That was his thing. That was where he was as a reporter. And to that end, that is one of the reasons why this is downright sad. I mean, you're talking about, he had a public access channel, a public access outlet called Albany Banana Corps Broadcast. Rather, just Albany Banana Corps. I apologize. I'm actually reading this right now. I want to make sure I had the name of it correct. And it was on his local public access channel. I started out with public access. So definitely felt like I had a kinship with him on that one. And one of the things he did was he shot the video of an Albany woman who hit her head on a curb while she was in police custody in 2016. And he's been in a lot of domestic hot spots, you know, a lot of situations going on around the country. He was there just like I was during the inauguration of Donald Trump, as it was just earlier mentioned. And he was at a pro-Trump rally in Washington, D.C. that happened on the same day as a Juggalo march that was happening. And I really honestly wish I was there for that. I was not able to make that one. But he was there to cover it. I mean, he saw himself in playing both roles as, you know, national reporter, community reporter, you know. And it wasn't so much about, his motivation wasn't so much political as it was about, you know, just getting the story out. Did he have his political leanings that make all the difference in the world? Of course he did. I think because he's so honest, because he's so out there, is the reason why he's where he is today.
Yeah, that part. I also noted that this is a well-rounded person that is very involved with different projects and communities, is somebody who just says it how it is, you know, reports fact and the truth. And in the climate of journalism where it's so this way or that way, it's really hard to find good media that supports, you know, the truth. There's all these intentions. You mentioned propaganda. I don't see Alex as an extremist. I think that he is being disciplined for very unjust reasons, and to defend community is very much somebody with integrity that is obviously a functioning community member. I know that if somebody in my community was about to be hurt, I would step in between that and make sure it wouldn't happen. But, you know, of course, it's always, to me, it seems that law enforcement tends to side with the fash. Not to make this about propaganda, because this is not about politics, but do you have any thoughts on that, Daryl? Why is it that it seems law enforcement seems to side with the fash?
I think someone always makes the point, and people always make the point that why do you not see, basically they're always defending their own, I should say. I mean, it's always amazing to me how in the case of the Proud Boys, there always seems to be a bit of leniency afforded them unless the heat is really on. I mean, this whole thing about, and even with January 6th, with not just the Proud Boys, not just with the Oath Keepers, but with everybody that did what they did on that day, they simply allowed the right wingers, whether you're talking about Albany or you're talking about DC, they let them go home. No matter how bad things went, no matter how much evil they've done that day, they were simply allowed to go home. And in a point that says that we do in fact protect ourselves, they would not have gotten arrested if we, us independent journalists, a citizen journalist like Alex Stokes, or myself, or a number of other groups out there that just basically took to the internet and just said, yo, we're going to go get these guys. If it wasn't for all of us doing the legwork to say, this is where you find them, this is where you can go get them, and this is why, and we started making a lot of noise about that, we wouldn't be looking at all the arrests that we've seen. We probably wouldn't even be, we wouldn't be looking at the number of Proud Boys that are sitting in jail right now. We would probably even be looking at Donald Trump looking at charges if it wasn't for basically the general public saying, do something, because law enforcement didn't seem too interested in it. Like I said before, I mean, to bear in mind, I should point out that, yeah, you are talking about the Trump administration. That's still no excuse. That's still no excuse. It could be the Trump administration that January 6th happened under, but other cops died and they were still allowed to go home. Because we should have actually been there to document and have our own videos and have our own tapes so that we can, so that nothing could disappear. Luckily, they were so full of themselves that they gave us thousands upon thousands of hours of footage so that everybody was able to use it regardless. Really, we should, I was stressed to the very end that we did need to be there to prevent something like that from happening, prevent something like January 6th from happening. And we'll be there next year, regardless of what goes down. But that's what we do. We try to protect ourselves and we try to be that opposition for we the people. And when I say we the people, I mean we, not what they say we the people, not them the people. And really, that's what happened in Albany. That's what happened in Albany. And yes, we do have to deal with the fact that Alex is sitting in jail right now for it. But the fact of the matter is, you still have to do things like that.
I think it's important to note there's a number of other anti-fascists facing almost identical cases. There's one in... there's a number in San Diego that defended the city and against a similar crowd. I don't remember the date. There was a crowd of MAGA with knives, with clubs, and other weapons that were attacking counter-protesters and just the general public. And the people that were prosecuted were anti-fascists. I will be having an episode about one of them who I've been corresponding with in a little bit, but it's this is not a unique experience. Recently there was a drag protest in drag queen story hour in Vermont, and some of the defenders had to defend against right-wing MAGA types, and it's very lucky that none of them were arrested and put in prison, because there's a number of cases in Vermont where people have gone to prison for simple self-defense.
Yeah, and you think about it, it's almost like a scare tactic. Don't try to fight against what we do to you, you know? And you just have to brush that aside. You have to take the risk because the alternative is still going to look pretty similar to what they do to you anyway. I mean, they're still trying to kill you. They're still trying to kill you. Well, you have to lose.
I'm going to bring this into a religious realm. I'm Jewish. Jewish law is if you see someone being attacked, you are obliged to protect them. And Jewish philosophy does not particularly approve of allowing yourself to be victimized just for some pacifistic reason. You have an obligation to defend yourself as you do your family, your neighbor, the stranger in the land, as we might say. And I bring in the Jewish perspective because Alex is a member of the Jewish community, as am I.
And I think that one of the things that is really important to note is how much the fascist country flip out when you do, in fact, defend yourself and others. I mean, they will go all day long attacking one person after another. When either that person stands up or somebody else stands up for them, they are the biggest enemy. They are the biggest threat to America as far as they will try to paint it out to be. And that's how you know, incidentally, that you are doing the right thing. I mean, the way they tried to defame the name Antifa, the lengths that they have gone to just simply undercut what Antifa means and what Antifa does, to the point that there will be individuals that pretend that they were or are Antifa on right-wing radio or right-wing television to undermine who we are, to speak to what it is we're fighting and the fact that it's worth fighting them.
I agree with you, Daryl, that it's usually sensationalized. If we look in the histories of Antifa Chishishe and what it was, is just a community that was pressed up against the wall in concentration camps, all either die laying down or on my feet. They decided on their feet. When we have a country that has misbehaved so much in the ideas of fascism that a person can't defend their own community without being basically crucified in prison. These are real issues. We as anti-fascists or anarchists, this is not the sensationalized idea of the far right. We're not some sort of underground group that's out to get you. We're functioning community members like Alex Stokes, you know, like, is a family guy, is around all the time doing the best that he can do to pitch in for his community and just keep it real. This is not a sensationalized, just black block, somebody that's just some vague, you know, they sensationalize someone. It becomes a problem. And I think part of the work is, and as Alex Stokes does, is just to keep things real without a bias of, like, to me, anti-fascism is not even a political ideology. This is just a reality to be against a fascist, problematic system that is doing no good for the people any longer. That's all that I see. I just wanted to throw that 2 cents in, and so that people that this reaches understands that we're not some kind of crazy underground group. We're right next to you on a bus. We like the, you know, like, I don't know. I just want to see Stokes free as soon as possible because he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, as I tell people from time to time, we're anti-fascist. We got class. Get used to it. But I think the other thing to bear in mind, I mean, we touched on it pretty much a couple of questions back, is that we have to defend ourselves because they won't defend us. The people that we put in these positions are not there to defend us. They considered themselves to be the ones who they're protecting the world against us, as far as they're concerned. And then you look at the world that they want. I mean, and the world that the so-called arbiters of law enforcement come from, and you see how dirty some of them might be. Like when you talk about the Albany County District Attorney that's dealing with Alex's case, he has been getting accused of stealing from grant programs. And I mean, he's not arrested, no repercussions, he's kept his job. He will deny that this is happening, and we must stress this. And he gave the money that he allegedly stole back and all of this. But when you look at this, this is something that you hear from politicians about politicians all the time, especially when it comes to law enforcement. And it's and it tells you, okay, so where do we find the people who will really protect us, protect our interests? And then you just got to look within.
I go to a gym today, coming back from the gym to do this interview. There was an accident in front of me. There's railroad tracks that go across the road at an angle. And a guy hit the railroad tracks, flipped his bike, and knocked him out. And he was all bloody. A bunch of cars stopped. Me and this guy were there. I got him disentangled from his own wheels, and he's unconscious. He starts to come to consciousness. People are saying, let's call the ambulance. And the first thing he says is, don't call the cops. And this guy has blood coming out of his eyes, blood coming out of his mouth. His face is barked. He got knocked out cold. And he is afraid of the police. This is why we have to defend us, because, you know, he knows obviously they're not going to defend him, and then we made sure he was okay while he was limping away on walking his bike. But you know, we're in a sad state, and that's why people defend their community themselves by mm-hmm. their own strength, and why people volunteer like that.
I mean, when you take a look at while we're talking, as we are talking about all this, we have a case going on in where is it? It's in the Sonia Massey case that just happened just a couple of days ago, where she called the police asking for their help. It was in Springfield, Illinois, asking for their help in a prowler that was around her house. She called the police, and they come in, treat her like she's the bad guy. And I mean, they didn't know a thing about de-escalation, and she ends up getting killed by one. Now, let's be fair. They filed murder charges against that police officer. But it speaks to the reason why a lot of people don't trust the police, regardless of whether or not they get charged, because the truth of the matter is they very seldom get charged. But they did in fact charge this police officer, who had a history of other infractions in several other police departments. But it's frustrating when people tell you that you should call the you can keep on going after the police all you want, but one day you're gonna need them, and when we do need them, they do things like what we just saw happen to Sonia Massey. And the Fort Worth case. When we talk about Donta Wright, I believe the name was. And I apologize. No, I'm sorry. I want to make sure I got that name right. No, I mean, when you talk about, I don't have the correct name. And I apologize. I apologize because I can't remember the name right off the top of my head. But, there was a couple of years back, there was a neighbor of a woman who was in her house playing video games. He didn't know that at the time, but he hadn't seen her in a while. So he wanted to just get a wellness check on her, just to make sure that she was okay. The police go there. She hears some ruckus going on outside. Remember, this is Texas. So she grabbed her weapon. She's still in her house. She doesn't know what's going on. Cop sees somebody inside the house with a firearm. Shoots her dead. She was just playing video games with her nephew. I have to apologize. I said son earlier. Nephew. Luckily, he got charged, but I don't know the outcome of that case. I have to look again. But the neighbor said his biggest mistake was to call the police in the first place. And I think that's sad. And I think that goes back to we protect ourselves. If we were the ones that they like to blame Antifa for January 6th, if we were the ones involved with January 6th, they would have wrapped us up. I said this on MSNBC. If it was truly us, we wouldn't even get close to the Capitol. They would have wrapped us up in orange netting and said we were under arrest. They would have kettled us like God knows what. How do we know that? They did it on Inauguration Day, 4 years earlier. They did it without us even, they did it in Lafayette Park when we weren't even thinking about the White House. Just so Donald Trump can pose in front of a church with a Bible. You know? So if we did January 6th, we would not have been able to pull off what they pulled off. I mean, that just shows you just how dedicated they are in their fascism. Let's just be real.
I wanted to talk more around We Keep Us Safe and what that means. Daryl, you were talking a lot around the dire need of we've been pushed here to keep us safe. I wanted to reiterate that We Keep Us Safe is a practice. You know, I often say that it is a practice. It's not something that we scream through a megaphone during a demonstration or acted protest or anything like that. This is a practice day to day out of necessity. So I just wanted to know in Alex's case that day, without going too much into his case, that it is very obvious that he was acting out of a very human practice. This is something that is an urgency. If you see somebody that is about to be clobbered, you want to stop it from happening. What do? You act. Where were the cops? Not like they help us anyway. But by their own fascist standards, they say, well, why don't you call the police in a time like, man, there has been so many times where like I wouldn't have time to call the cops, nor would I, to react in situations. You know, like they're not there. They're only human, and they're not invincible just because they have a badge. I just wanted to go off on that real quick. We keep us safe and how it's a practice.
I mean, I would say that when it comes to the police, they should have been. What they were doing that day was basically allowing the Stop the Steal knuckleheads to attack folks. I mean, I think one person got hit with either a plank or a flagpole or something like that. And nobody on the right got arrested. No one on the right got arrested. And that just speaks to why we have to protect ourselves. The people that are supposed to be protecting us are too busy protecting their interests. And I just want to say right quick, I said that I didn't have the name. I just want to say the police officer that shot and killed Atiana Jefferson in her mother's home in 2019 in Fort Worth. She was killed in 2019. That's the case I was just talking about. His name was Aaron Dean, and he was convicted. He was convicted in 2022. So, like I said, I didn't know the outcome of the case. I had to look at it. It's good to know that sometimes the right people are going to jail. I mean, everybody always says we need to burn down the prisons, and I dig that. I dig that. But where will we keep the bad guys that are truly bad? That's the only thing. Because people like Aaron Dean, people like this police officer that killed Sonia Massey, they need a home. And that's where their home should be, away from the rest of society. Unfortunately, our biggest problem is the fact that the criminal justice system doesn't normally work that way. We are the bad guys. We are the criminals. And we do nothing more but do things that today's society doesn't want us to do. Or rather, today's right-wing society, today's fascists don't want us to do. And they're the ones that seem to have control of, you know, the so-called criminal justice system.
I have to say, there in Vermont, there's a sheriff that is going on trial right now for kicking a handcuffed prisoner. A lot of these police officers we're seeing being convicted, they're being convicted because of the George Floyd uprising. Mm-hmm. The powers that be do not want another 2020. They do not want all the police precincts being burnt by people who are tired of police victimizing people. I don't think it's not because the system works. It's because they know there is a limit to how much people are going to tolerate. And unfortunately, the price for backing them off is people fighting back, and there's always a cost to that.
I mean, it goes back to what I just said. I mean, if January 6th, they wouldn't be sitting in jail right now if we didn't insist. It was us that really just said, "Yo, we're going to keep you honest. You're going to do something about these individuals. They are not supposed to be out there allowed to do whatever they want to do." And we did the same thing with Charlottesville. They weren't going after the knuckleheads in Charlottesville. The only reason why there wasn't, only reason why Heather Heyer, killer was arrested, as far as I'm concerned, was simply because he was still there. It was right there in the heat of things that he had gotten arrested. But everybody else is being held accountable. That took some time. And the rest are being hit civilly. And even now, some of them are getting arrested and charged. But the fact of the matter is, it's only due to the efforts on our part. And we just got to stay hot on that.
You know, I think of the process of accountability and how putting our eyes on law enforcement or the powers that be and saying, "We're watching you." I see journalism as such a good tool for that. And I just want to bring Alex's journalism back up. Is anytime that I happen to see something that he was there during a demonstration, he's keeping it real. He's saying what had happened, what's going on. And if it isn't for journalism, if you keep on locking up our journalists, this is a way of censorship. Now, I don't want to like be speculatory and this is what they're doing, but like the fact of the matter is, if we're constantly being damned. You know, I was on a jail bus next to a comrade after a demonstration in the past. One of the things that he said to me, he pointed at the statue of Lady Justice. You know, she, a depiction of her blindfolded, holding scales and sword. He says, "You know why she's blindfolded?" I said, "I could think of a lot of reasons, but go off. Why?" He says, "Because she doesn't see people like you and me." And that was such a powerful statement, that when we look at justice, we understand that there is no justice. There's just us. This has pushed us to a certain dire need to be who we are and act in our rights to defend ourselves. Now, in the case of Texas and New York, we could talk about different barring of law and what's right here and what's right there. After a while, if that law becomes obsolete and she is so blind to us, we're going to have to do what justice is accordingly. I know that Texas is a stand your ground state. So that's like absurd to me, even by their own playbook, their own colonial playbook, that somebody can't stand their ground in their own home. Like, this is a problem. Like, this is a major issue that we constantly see. I'm honestly sick of this story, you know, and I'm thankful that we're talking about it and speaking out about it.
And that brings us to the other thing that's a big problem. Alex's story needs to be out there a lot more. When you hear the right wingers talk about the J6ers being political prisoners, everybody laughs at it. But they have these major news outlets like Fox News or minor news outlets like Newsmax and OAN promoting that lie that they're political prisoners. And of course, they have a presidential candidate that likes to promote it. Regardless of how silly it is, they still have the platform to spread that lie. They still have a infrastructure within their fascist media to spread that lie. Alex Stokes deserves that kind of outlet. And I mean, we need to make sure that Alex Stokes and everybody that we are looking at during this week, as we observe those who are political prisoners that are fighting fascism, everybody that we are talking about this week needs to be heard from and needs to be heard about. Didn't even mention how Benjamin Varela went to jail. Now, if you don't know who Benjamin Varela is, then that speaks to where I'm at on this. That speaks to my point. Because you know who Kyle Rittenhouse is. And the whole logic behind Kyle Rittenhouse is that he attacked folks that chased him down. I mean, he shot and killed folks that chased him down and attacked him. Well, Benjamin Varela was being chased down by a real notorious Proud Boy. His nickname is Tiny, out in Oregon. And he was either Oregon or Washington. I'm kind of fuzzy on that right now. But they were leaving the area during this protest. And Tiny felt that he needed to chase them down and do what Tiny does, trying to start some fights and nonsense. Varela turned around and shot him in the leg. Varela went to jail for that. And he was defending himself and others. Now, Tiny, for other reasons, is sitting in jail. And bear in mind, should I say, finally sitting in jail, because there's a lot of things that Tiny done that is documented that he's not in jail for, but there's a few things that he finally got popped for, and he's sitting in jail for about 8 years or so. But Varela, just like Alex, is sitting in jail right now for simply defending himself and others, while people like Kyle Rittenhouse, who had no business there, who was part of a crew that was more or less provoking fights, he's allowed to not only go free, but run the media circuit acting like he was the hero of the day in Wisconsin that day. And no, we're not playing that. And we have no business playing that. We have to talk about Alex. We have to talk about Benjamin Varela. We have to talk about all the political prisoners out there that have been fighting that kind of nonsense for generations upon generations, because in the end, they're the ones that are keeping us safe. They're the ones that are suffering for it. And they're the ones who we need on the street. They're the ones who we need out here working for their communities.
Just to make a small correction, Tiny Tosi got shot in the toe by Ben Varela.
Oh, my mistake. Yeah. Toe.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle Rittenhouse shot for center mass to kill people. Ben was like a lot of the people who fired at the at some of the rebellions on the West Coast, did not fire for center mass, did not try to kill.
Gotcha. It's funny. I mean, that's a very important point. Varela wasn't trying to kill Tiny, and I'm gonna tell you, by the way, don't let any of this dissuade you from protecting yourself and others. Do not allow that to happen, because that's what they want you to do. They do not want you to protect yourself. They do not want you to think twice as you do. The truth of the matter is you have just as much a right to protect yourself as they have a right to protect themselves. Only difference is they are the ones that are aggressors. And they should not be given any quarter whatsoever. They make the wrong moves, you make all the right ones, period.
I mean, the way I think of it, I don't, my community, I'm a member of a very hated community in these day and age of right-wing politics. I don't want to become another statistic, and I know I am stealing the words and steam of someone else who may want to chime in on this.
We may have to be the person who speaks, because some people can't.
Right. To be able to be mouthpieces of our communities, or just living examples of what the right thing is. This isn't about, after a while, we can't look at it as left or right politics. We just look at it from the perspective of what is morally correct to human existence in that time, in that moment. The double standard existed since the founding of this country. And I'm going to keep it real with that like, to create moral panic. Antifa has been around since World War II, and it wasn't until Trump made it a moral panic that they're on some kind of witch hunt for some kind of terrorist organization. That's ridiculous. It is not, you know. I just want to get away from the narrative of left and right. And I understand the graph, and I understand the politics of such, but when it comes boiled down to our very human existence, we have to stay vigilant by nature. And honestly, I see Alex as a hero, and I'm very thankful.
He is. And incidentally, I would just say that the most important thing to remember is that the pen is mightier than the sword. No wonder they're going after journalists around the world. No wonder they're going after the journalists and killing them in Gaza. You know, no wonder they're locking people up like Alex. You know, but that's not, that. Like I said, that shouldn't dissuade us. That shouldn't deter us from doing what we do. I'm a journalist by vocation. This is all I know. This is the only weapon I know. You know, I have a website. One People's Project has a website. That's my organization, called IdaVox, IdaVox.com. It's named after Ida B. Wells. It's named after a woman who had her facilities burned down because she constantly wrote about the things that people did not want her to write about, lynchings in her day. She kept on reporting on it, kept on making sure people knew about it, and they went after her for it. But she kept writing, and that's the attitude you got to have. You got to keep writing and keep fighting.
And to talk about what my co-host says, let's get with the not look at this as a right and left perspective. There's two women who have had to run from the Vermont Capitol after fighting fascists. One of them is actually quite conservative. She was with me at a gun rights rally, and there was fascists there. And we had to run from Montpelier because we didn't know if these fascists that nearly got in a fight with her were going to follow. And then there was a Christian nationalist demo, very hateful. And again, very proud of the woman that we had to run with. She wouldn't put up with their bullshit. And also, in my neighborhood, there's a conservative who I trust with my back. He will throw down if fascists come. Because we stood up for him as anti-fascists when he was down. And that's important to not get blinded by, you know, if you're actually standing for the community.
One of the things I should say before we close for today is that Alex Stokes does have a website, simply titled freealexstokes.com. And you can get a lot more information about his case and how you can get involved and
get him back home. He's going to need that. He's going to need y'all to, he's going to need the people out there to just advocate on his behalf. Much love to you, Anarchist Black Cross, because they're out there doing it. They're out there doing it. I didn't even know they were doing it. about a couple of months ago. So yeah, I mean, I'm pausing right now because it's just amazing that we are still doing this in 2024. I know that's a cliched line, but we really should have known better. We should be doing better. Hopefully, as the days, months, and years go on, we will be doing better. There's a lot of folks out there that are trying to do folks harm, and we're just going to have to knock them back significantly. And we're going to do that the right way. Alex Stokes did it the right way. And that means that we got to learn to protect ourselves from what's happening to Alex Stokes. And we also have to protect Alex Stokes and everybody like him. That's what this week is about. That's what July 25th is about.
I know we're wrapping up. I just wanted to say, speak to one more thing about when we're carrying our comrades through the incarceration system and the mental, the spiritual violence it does to us. It does a lot of harm. And let's carry Alex and others in the spirit of recognizing all of our warriors to be able to carry them in the aftermath, the adjustment of coming from the inside to the outside. I can't stress this enough, that it's such an adjustment. Just because somebody is free and say, yay, we got them out of jail, it's all over now. There is also the restorative justice part where we can act, you know, in solidarity with our comrades to be able to help them in the aftermath. I just wanted to stress that point real quick, because I see so often that our comrades get out, you know, it's sensationalized on the news. Everybody knows who that is. And we don't do this for our stripes. We don't do it for honor or clout or anything like that. We do this because it's out of necessity. The sacrifice that is created, let's make sure that we carry the families that are affected too, to the best of our abilities. When you see a struggling comrade, poke in on them and say, hey, how's your mental health? Hey, what's going on? Is there anything that you need? Do you want some zines? Hey, look at these cool stickers. Those go such a long way in the aftermath, just little tokens here and there.
And I will have to say, having helped carry more than one person through a probation process, it is very heavy. When you drive your car and you get a flat tire, it's usually no big deal. When you have to get someone to probation and you get a flat tire, this becomes a crucial event. It's a panic. It is absolutely world-ending, just a flat tire. And, you know, while I was working before, my wife carried one of our neighbors through this, and she had to take him to all his work assignment stuff and ended up sometimes doing these works with him to make sure that he was okay. And it requires a great deal of attention to detail, because systems will mess with you. They lost his community service things, and he had to redo it. So you have to keep records. And when you've been traumatized by prison, by the system, it's hard to pay attention to these things. It's a very painful thing. And it's like, sometimes, you know, people forget about someone on probation. And sometimes it's terrible having a sword of Damocles hanging over your head. And there are a lot of anti-fascist prisoners that are out there in this situation. And some of them we can't talk about. I got, there was one anti-fascist who I will not mention, because I was slapped down for even trying to get him to get on this platform because I wanted to offer him this opportunity to talk, but it was so sensitive that even reaching out to him was a problem. So this is, there's a lot of care that needs to be done with our people that are on probation, and we have to be mindful, and we cannot forget about them. I was at a training the other day. I'm going to get emotional. We talked about the stages of an action. When you plan an action, when you do it, if there's arrests, when does the action end? If the action is rough, the action ends when the last person finishes therapy for the trauma, or when they heal from the physical wounds of the thing. That's when the action ends. And as somebody who has been in actions, the actions of 2017 are not over for me.
Failure. And you're not the only one that feels that way. Just know that. And just know that you and everybody else that went through 2017 and everything that has been going on over the past 8 years is not alone. That's the most important thing to remember. No one is alone in this. And that's how I have to, that's how I have to end it. Unfortunately.
Thank you so much, Daryl, for your words, and Marina. We're happy to hear more about Alexis Stokes' case and what sort of supports. Daryl, before you go, I know we're wrapping up. Can you tell us again the website?
All right, we can go to idavox.com, IDAVOX.com. You can see all kinds of news stories and updates about Alex and anything that's anti-fascist. And you can also find us on Instagram and on threads.net.
Okay, since we are wrapping up, I will read us out. To find more about this campaign, go to freealexstokes.com. If you like this podcast, please consider sharing and liking it on your social media. Reviews help drive the algorithms that basically run the internet world. So please, if you have time, leave a review on your podcast aggregator. Reviews on Apple and Google help a lot. So if you're willing to deal with those companies, and only if you are willing to deal with those companies, leave reviews. This was VMN Volume 4, Episode 4. VMN was formerly known as Vermont Movement News and can be found on podcast apps as Vermont Movement News. This is Bella Chow, played by Monsieur Jack, who is gracious enough to provide his music under Creative Commons licensing. Enjoy, and thank you for listening.
questo il fiore del partigiano. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 e questo il fiore del partigiano. Molto per la libertà, e questo è il fiore.